Okay, so it is 5:30, and I'm going to go ahead and get started talking about retirement, which sounds like a really boring topic, which I'm happy to talk about it because I think it's something that our industry doesn't talk about enough. And our industry also does not offer enough education on what retirement really means. But before that, I want to introduce myself. I'm Caleb. A lot of you know me. If you're SID students, you might not know me as well. But I want to invite you guys, if you have my phone number, you can text me during the call to ask any questions. And if you have our Facebook forum, if you're in that, you can also post to the forum and ask questions, and I can answer those for you as well. The first thing I want to do is I want everyone to kind of understand this idea of an American dream, or what the American dream was, or what it is, or what it's turning into. But the American dream was like kind of a Nixon era type idea where you would have a job, probably a factory working job during the industrial age, industrial revolution, but probably a factory job or some sort of office job, and you would work for about 60 something years, and then you would retire. And you would own a home. You wouldn't rent. You would own, and you'd have children, and they would grow up, and they would be part of the same process. And you would die, and you would either be taken care of by your family, or you'd be put into a nursing home, or you'd retire and move to Florida and have a second home, because in this American dream idea, we have multiple homes. So I don't know if I don't really know anyone who I don't really know if anyone is living this American dream anymore. I feel like maybe a generation back, maybe, or maybe two generations back, maybe they're living it. But everyone's definitely feeling this effect of a lack of an American dream. So that dream, I don't want to declare it dead, because I think that it is possible to make those things happen. I think it is possible to work for a company for 6 years, own a home, retire, move to Florida, and live on a beach the rest of your life, and then go into a home or something like that. So I believe that that's possible, and I believe that there's a lot of people out there that really want that. But I just want to bring light to the fact that that dream might not be possible for everyone. Not everyone is going to be able to achieve it, and if you are trying to achieve it, it's three times as hard now than it was back in the day. And also, I think the American dream is changing. I don't know if people necessarily want the same things anymore that they did back then. I don't know if people still want the three kids and the dog and the White House with a picket fence and low mortgage. And I don't know if people want that anymore. Our world is becoming a little more global. The consciousness is changing, and we're kind of getting to a place where we want to travel. We want to meet new people. We want to experience new things. And we can, because of technology and because of where we're at in our place in history. We have a really unique set of rules that didn't really apply to anyone until now. So it's really exciting to live in this era. But I really want the whole point of talking about the American dream is not because I want to say that it's bad, and not because I want to declare that it's dead, but I want to shed light on bringing a different consciousness about it. That it has changed. And having this kind of consciousness in general, just this consciousness, this awakened idea that it's okay that these kinds of things change. It's okay that this American dream that was started with a really nice plan in mind has now, metamorphosized into something that fits our generation and fits everyone living in our generation. But this can be scary for some people. So if you're on the call or you're listening to the recording and you're someone who really wants the American dream and all those ideals, I just want you to be aware that it might not be what you think it is. It's definitely not what TV is selling you anymore. So you have to kind of change your consciousness and be ready to do different things in order to get that. And for those of you that are listening to the call or on the recording and they don't want the American dream, you're in luck, because it is so much easier to experience our world and our way of retirement, if you will, today than it has ever been. More traveling, more moving, continuous work but vacations while working. So we live, if we're in America, since we're talking about the American dream, we live in an area where we don't get a lot of vacation time, especially if we work for someone. And if we work for ourselves, we probably get zero vacation time, which is even crazier if you think about it. Oh, I guess that was part of the American dream too, owning your own business. But the reality is that that when we were, you know, when we work for ourselves or we want to take vacations or, and we can't, or our sick days, we have like, I think in America we have like, I think the most ever sick days I've ever been given is 7. So you're only allowed to get sick 7 days a week. And if you do anything past that, then it's your own fault and you got to pay for it, which if anyone agrees with me, that's kind of silly, especially if you're someone who, you know, like myself, who I have asthma, so I'm really prone to bronchitis or allergies or things that have to do with the lungs. So it's very hard to work when you have a lung issue, which I actually currently am dealing with right now. But it's hard to deal with that. It's hard to work, especially when you have physical work, like behind a chair at a salon, or even if you're freelance or any really any type of work. But it's really hard to be a factory worker in an American dream ideal when you're not healthy and you're living in a country that doesn't help you enough with healthcare. So I just, which is also part of this American dream idea. Again, the American dream is not dead. It is different. It is different now. I want to talk about what's happened in our economy and our world and our consciousness as a whole, as a human race. Our economy fell years back, and we went into, in my opinion, a crazy tizzy of the media hyping us up that, you know, no one had jobs. You know, people were getting out of school with no jobs. People that had jobs for 60 years were losing their jobs, losing their pensions, losing all these things, had no retirement anymore, had no plan. This plan they had built had gone away. So in that moment, there was this fear of, yeah, you know, you the American dream is dead. There was this feeling of loss, feeling of lack. And that's a really strong driving force behind getting people motivated to vote a certain way or do certain things. So I don't want to get into that. I don't want to get into it too politically, but there is a reason why we're motivated by fear. And that reason as humans is because of survival. We fear keeps us alive. It is the smallest part of our brain. It's the, actually the brain stem that regulates that, that tells us, do not do that. Do not let that go, because if you do, you will die. Because I know you'll die, because you've had it this whole time, and you didn't die. So our brain kind of computes things, you know, there's parts of our brain that do their job like that, where it's very black and white. You know, it's the same with eating habits, or the same with money habits, or the same with anything. Or God forbid, when someone, you know, that we love, we lose them, our brain tells us that it's the end of the world, because that feeling, that lack of loss, that consciousness of loss, is saying, you're not going to survive this. And that's why when we experience really negative things in our lives, the first feeling is like dread and like you feel like you're dying. If anyone's ever broken up with someone or gotten divorced or lost a loved one or the first feeling or lost $1 million, if anyone's ever invested and lost $1 million, the first feeling is that you are going to die. and that manifests differently. That manifests in some people for health, that manifests as depression, anxiety in other people. But the point is that consciousness is so strong. And our brain is programmed, because we're animals, to react that way. Now, why am I telling you this? Because I'm hoping that if I can tell you that when that happens and your brain kicks in and tells you you're going to die, you don't have any money, you don't have a place to live, you lost that person was there for you, they were going to take care of you, now they're not here. When your brain starts doing that, you need to remember that that's your, what we call your critter brain. It's the animal part of your brain. It's the brainstem telling you that this is not how it's supposed to, this is not how it usually is. And so when it's not how it usually is, it's the end of the world. Well, our economy and our world and where we're at, it's not how it usually is. And you can see that the entire world, based on media, just media alone, that we are all acting from that part of our brain, that critter brain, that tells us, this is not how it's supposed to be. This is not how it's always been. And that means everything is going to fail. We're going to lose everything. We're going to have lack. We're going to have loss. And we're supposed to be afraid of that. And we're supposed to fear that. And our brain is telling us the reason we have to fear this, the reason we have to fear change in the way that we deal with our money and our retirement and the way we grow our businesses is because we've never had to do it this way, and anything new could mean death. Now, that is how our brains work. That is not, that's one part of our brain. There's another part of our brain that tells us, it's the limbic part of our brain. That part of our brain is the part that builds up fear, anxiety, anger. It's justifying the first part of the brain, the critter brain. It's justifying that feeling. So when your brain says, you know what, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't, you don't have any money. What are you going to, you could lose it all. Your limbic system goes into overload and creates anxiety or anger, or it overloads it with an emotion. Which is funny because we have the frontal cortex of our brain, and that part of our brain is amazing because that part of our brain is the human part of our brain, and the human part of our brain doesn't actually deal with the first two. The human part of our brain looks at these things such as, you know, a collapsed economy or a ruined American dream, and it goes, what can we do now? This is amazing. What can we create next? We created an American dream when we needed it. Now what's the next phase? The human part of our brain loves growth. It loves growth. It loves growth and expansion. It has this idea that we're all one. It's actually a very spiritual part of our brain because it's not really connected to the animalistic part of our brain. So then you have that part of our brain saying, no, I know I'm supposed to be afraid. And this is where a lot of us are. This is where a lot of us have to be. I know I'm supposed to be afraid of what's happening. I know I'm supposed to be afraid of the fact the economy has collapsed. I know I'm supposed to be afraid that I lost all my money in stocks. I know I'm supposed to be afraid that I cannot provide a retirement plan for myself. I know I'm supposed to be afraid that I might lose my business. I know I'm supposed to be afraid, but for some reason I'm kind of excited. And there's a lot of moments we have in our life like that where it's like everything's going wrong, but you're like, this is kind of cool in a weird way. That's the frontal cortex of your brain. That is the problem solving of your brain. That part of your brain loves those types of things. But you remember, you have underlying, you know, you have the limbic system and the critter brain saying you might die, you know, feel fear, feel anxious, you know, get worked up, be angry. But then you have this other part where it's like, I think I can handle it. So we really got to focus on dealing with, and the reason you need to know about these three levels of brain is because by knowing them, you have power over them. When you didn't know them, you didn't know where those things were coming from. You just felt doom, and you thought, this is the end. But now you know that there's a whole system in your brain that's, you know, trying to, A, keep you alive is the main thing. And that frontal cortex part of your brain is like, no, this is opportunity. We have so many things we could do with this. I hope that all of our students, I hope that all the Destroy the Hairdresser students that are part of our program can live in the frontal brain. And I hope that when they hear things like retirement, or they hear things like 401k, or they hear things like budgeting, which makes our, as a creative person, makes my eyes gloss over. I hate talking about these things. But I hope that when our students or our clients are dealing with those things, they can, when they feel the anxiety and they feel the fear and they feel all that, I hope that they get to a place where they can say, this is just the animal part of my brain. Because the human part of my brain knows how to solve this problem and also knows that I'm going to be totally fine. Because the human part of my brain knows that I have my mother who loves me, who will take care of me and help me. I have my father who loves me and will help me and take care of me. I have my neighbors that I don't know them that well, but I know they would help me and take care of me. I have my wife, my husband, my spouse of any kind. Like, that part of our brain justifies in the most positive way. I have these people in my life. I know I'm not going to die. I know I'm not going to be left alone. I know I have I'm going to create a plan. I'm going to work it, and it's going to be fine. It's just going to look different. And there's certain parts of our brain that don't like that. So I just wanted to talk about, that because I think that's really healthy for all areas of life. But I think it's definitely healthy for where we are right now as a society to know that those three parts of our brain are working. And if you look at society today, some people only work in the first two brains. They don't use the frontal cortex that much. And if you know who I'm talking about, it's getting a little out of hand. But we do it all the time. We do it all of the time. I do it irrationally. I don't know if any of you are the same, but I'll be in a subway and it's taking too long, and all of a sudden my critter brain is like, you're going to die here. It's taking too long. It's too hot. This is the end. And then I start to get anxious. And then my frontal brain is like, maybe you should walk upstairs. It's so much better upstairs. It's light outside. You can go breathe air. So, like, it's so funny how it all, you know, and it's stupid stuff, but it's every second these three brains are constantly working together. And either they're working with each other or against each other, a lot of the times against each other. So the three brains, you have the brain stem, which is the critter brain. You have the limbic system, which is where we get our feelings of anxiety, fear, anything that's over. It can be, even be excitement. It's an overloading of a feeling. It's an overloading process. And then you have the frontal cortex, which is telling us that everything's okay and that you got it because it's you. It's the part of your brain that's really you. Moving into the lack, the power of consciousness. So we talked about the brain, but the brain is not consciousness. The brain is a computer that functions. Consciousness is something that science doesn't really, they know that we are conscious. I guess they identify consciousness as when the brain is awake and functioning. I guess you couldn't use the word unconscious when someone's knocked unconscious. Their brain is still functioning. Their body is still, you know, they're still their brain is still operating. So I guess you can't even say that. But science is not really sure what consciousness is. You can research it. It's very interesting when you research it, but it always goes back to how the brain functions. But consciousness, to me, and how I want to share it with everyone, consciousness is this ability to be aware of what you're doing when you're doing it. So a quick, easy thing is like when you're driving to work in the morning, do you think about what it takes to drive the car and what it feels like to touch the steering wheel and what road you're going to take and how you're going to use your turn signal? Do you think of those things when you're going to work? Most of the time not, unless you took a different direction or you drink a lot of coffee and you're just hyper aware. But most of the time, no. Most of the time you get in the car, you turn it on and you're unconscious. The rest is just, you know, autopilot. You get to work. Sometimes you like get to work and you're like, oh, that was fast. Like you don't even remember it. That is an unconscious mind. That is an unconscious person. And that is a very normal thing. A conscious person is someone who, an unconscious person is someone who also eats. They eat and they keep going. Eat, go, eat, go, eat, go. It's kind of like they're just like piling food in to not, you know, die. But a conscious person is someone who's aware. A conscious person is someone who makes the food, sets the plates, puts the food on the table, dishes out certain portions for themselves. Not too much, not too little, exactly what they need. Someone who smells the food before they eat it. They really taste the food while they're chewing on it. They're awake. And we have moments where we're like this. And these moments are really wonderful because if you've ever experienced anything, if you've ever watched a newborn playing or you've seen a small cute animal, that's why we love cute things or cute animals or Facebook images and videos of cute things and animals and babies, because it makes us conscious. It immediately draws us in and we're aware of what we're feeling and we're aware of what we're looking at and we're appreciating it. We're not only just aware, we're appreciating it. And there's a lot of appreciation that goes into consciousness. Why am I telling you about consciousness? Because now I'm just going on and on about it. But it's really important because every class that we do, I'm probably going to touch base on it because it is the only reason to be alive as a human. Being conscious is the only reason to be alive as a human. An unconscious human is very animalistic. They're not really alive. They're not really living. So I really want to make that clear. Unconscious is a more robotic behavior. Conscious is a more proactive behavior. Unconscious is someone yells at me, I yell back. Conscious is someone yells at me, I am trying to hear what they're saying, and I need a minute to process it. And then I respond. So there's a difference, that's a slight difference as well between conscious and unconscious. But how does this relate to retirement and money? Retirement and money are both forms of consciousness. How you look at money and how you look at retirement is definitely based on your consciousness as a human. Some people believe they deserve retirement. It's their right. That's a consciousness. Some people believe I will never retire. I'm never going to have enough money. I'm never going to do it. There's no way. I'm just going to have to keep working. That's a consciousness. There are some people that are not even thinking about it, which is unconscious, but yet a consciousness nonetheless. They're just not concerned. With money. there are two different types of money consciousness. There used to be three, but now there are two because of fear that has driven the divide. So now we have people that they look at money and they say, I'm always going to have enough money. I'm always going to be able to make money. And I'm always going to be able to spend money. I have no issues with money. And there are also people that their consciousness regarding money is, I'm never going to have enough. I'm sorry, there are three. This is number two. I'm never going to have enough. I'm never going to be able to have anything that I want in life. I'm never going to be able to afford school. I'm never going to be able to afford buying my kids a gift. I'm always going to be this way. That's a poor man's consciousness, okay? A lot of us live there. A lot of us make day trips there, too, when we feel we don't have enough money. Very dangerous consciousness to live in. The third one is my least favorite and is the most incorrect consciousness, in my opinion, is that money is evil. This is also a poor man's idea of money. Poor people who don't have money like to demonize money, just like anyone likes to demonize anything that they don't understand or don't know how to use. So usually when someone demonizes money, it's bad, it's evil, I don't want it, I don't want any part of it, I live off the land. Okay, that's great, it's a great idea. But when you have to demonize it, it's because you don't know how it works and you're afraid of it. So you these three consciousness of money are very important. The only one you need to deal with is the rich man's consciousness, which is, I always have money, I will always have money, I will always be able to spend money, I will always be able to provide for my family. Even if you don't believe it, and even if it is not true, you need to start thinking of money that way. You need to start saying it over and over and over again until it becomes true in your mind. It's kind of a fake it till you make it situation. You need to reprogram, we all need to reprogram the way that we look at money. If we demonize it, we need to love it. If we feel we don't have it, we need to talk about the fact that we do have it. This isn't a technique in the power of positive thinking. This is literally reprogramming your consciousness. Very different than thinking positively. I'm all about thinking positively. I just don't think it does a lot. This is about reprogramming. Now, when it comes to retirement for people like us and where we are at, we are in a place where we do not have a 401k set up, and if you do, congratulations. We are not at a place where we have an IRA set up, and if you do, congratulations. These are all really great things to have, but when you don't have them, there is still other ways to deal with this. Many of you know that I wrote a blog called Retirement Math, which is the name of this call, but I wrote a blog about it, and I set up a little bit of a how-to for everyone who wanted to start saving for their future. I don't want to use the word retirement. I think the idea of retirement is awful. There's a quote that I put on this call and also on the blog about retirement being death, because that's pretty much what retirement turns into. But I want to talk about planning for the future, because I don't think that retirement is going to be the same in our generation as it used to be. Retirement now is going to be about what's the next part of my life? What does that look like? How much money do I need? And what do I want to do with it? Do I want to stop working? Maybe I don't want to stop working. Maybe I want to work one day a week. Maybe I want to take what I did for 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years and turn that into a consulting business. Maybe I want to open a salon. I don't work there, but I'm going to allow others. I'm going to teach others. I'm not going to retire. I'm going to teach and train people how to build their business through my business and then help them when they're ready to go. And then I have a steady stream of income, and they're going out and building their careers. It kind of relates back to the idea of legacy. I think that's the new form of retirement. If you'd listen to my former class, The Three Phases of Success, we talk about legacy. And this idea of retirement is a new idea of legacy. It's a really proactive way to move forward towards the end of our lives, as opposed to moving into a bigger house that we can't really afford and then just kind of wasting away at playing golf in Florida. Again, if you like that and that's your thing, then I apologize if I'm offending you. I just think that the world has more to offer, and I think we're going to be healthier longer. Even though statistics say that we're more unhealthy than our parents, I think that we, with our technology and in the healthcare industry, I think we're going to live longer, we're going to live healthier, and I think we're going to need more money. So I don't think it's about figuring out when you're going to stop working and when you're going to retire. I think it's about what's your next step in life and what's the legacy you want to leave behind. The quote that I have is, "To retire is to die." It's by Pablo Casals. And I think it's true. I think that because this idea of retirement, there's a consciousness behind it. The consciousness that we have been programmed to think about retirement is that when you retire, death is the next step. And I think that's sometimes why we leave this world, is because we just, you know, this is the next step. This is what we do. Now, yes, everyone leaves this world. I'm not going to get into that conversation, but I do think that sometimes our lives are cut shorter because of what we allow our consciousness to be. But here are the three tips that I want to give everybody. I don't demonize banks. I think banks are great. I think banks protect our money from being stolen from our homes. And I also know that banks are necessary for counting all the money that's, you know, most of the money that's circulating around the world and the U.S., it really keeps our economy steady and shows the economy where it is. If we were to all take our money out of the banks, the economy might collapse for a moment, like it did earlier in the century. But I am not a big bank fan. I don't think you need to do everything in a bank. And if you've been watching the news, and we have the Wells Fargo scam where they were getting people to open up accounts, 8 accounts per person in a bank because they needed that quota. They needed their stock prices to go up. And those people didn't need those things. And also, they were creating fake accounts in order to make their stocks look a lot more sexier to people that were investing. So I'm not demonizing, but also I want to bring awareness that banks don't have your best interest. So I do want you to consider other options. And I am all for putting money aside in a safety box in your house or whatever you want to do that's just for retirement. Or, and like I said, let's call it our legacy account. So for our legacy account, which is, we're no longer using the word retirement. I don't like that word, and I think the consciousness is just, it has just wrecked it. But legacy is a great consciousness, it's a great word. So legacy account. But if you are a professional in your 20s, you need to, if you're comfortable, open a savings account or open a retirement account in your bank or keep it at home. But you need to take 10 to 15% of your paychecks every day. That also includes your tips. There's no more of this, my tips are what I live on. You can live on them, but you're still going to put money away from those things because tips bring in a lot of cash and there's a lot to be put aside if you are being smart about it. So if you are in your 20s and you have not done anything, no saving, no retirement plan, nothing, in your legacy account, you are going to save 10 to 15% of every single thing that comes in, every single thing. If someone gives you $100, 10, 15% of it goes away for legacy account. If you are a professional in their 30s, you need to save 15 to 20%, whether it's tips, whether it's gifts, whether it's paychecks, whatever it is, no matter what. If money is coming to you and you're in your 30s, you need to put away 15% to 20% in your legacy account. If you are a professional in their 40s, you need to save 20 to 30% of all of your income, and it needs to go into your legacy account. That might seem like a lot, but these numbers are coming from, I'm assuming that if you're in your 30s and if you're a professional in your 40s or in your 30s or in your 20s, and I'm giving you these numbers, I'm assuming you've done no saving before. So hence, as you get older, I'm assuming that you need to save more to make up for what you have lost. Now, if you do the math, because a lot of my students, at least, I'm not sure about everyone else, but my students on the call, my clients, they are math people. And if you do the math, it's not coming out to a really strong number. It's not the greatest of numbers to have a legacy fund on. But you need to start. And why do you need to start? Because your consciousness of saving for your legacy has never existed, and you need to slowly train your brain to accept this as something that is fulfilling and that is an investment into yourself. It is about your consciousness. You don't have to like it. You don't have to want to do it. but I would make yourself do it. I would appreciate it. I would have yourself sit after you save this money. Look at that money every once in a while. Appreciate it. You know, you need to have the consciousness that says, I'm starting to put these things away. And because when you do that, when you change your consciousness about what retirement looks like, and you change your consciousness about how you're going to put money away for your legacy account, when you do that, you do a couple things. Because your consciousness about money is savings, you will automatically start putting more away than you thought, and you will automatically start putting more away than I'm requesting from this blog that I wrote. You will automatically start doing that because you will feel fulfillment, because your consciousness about leaving a legacy behind is much more exciting than a consciousness about retirement. Retirement is a little bit selfish. Legacy is not. So this is your new retirement plan. Retirement is death. Legacy is immortality. Legacy leaves something behind. Legacy helps others when you're gone. That's how you need to think about you saving for that time. So if you didn't listen to my class before, it's called The Three Phases of Success. We talk about the three phases, and the last phase is legacy. And I would love, if you haven't listened to that, that you would, you know, listen to that and kind of catch up, because I think this legacy idea is going to continue as well. But I really appreciate everyone being on the call. I hope that if you're listening to the recording or you're on the call now, that you were able to get something out of this. If I was speaking a little too over your head, you can always talk to me or your mentor or your coach about what we talked about today. They will, be able to shed more light on it. And if you have questions, you can always post them in the forum, and we can start a group conversation. I love group conversations. I love hearing other people's opinions. But like I said, start putting away for your legacy. You have a lot to do in this lifetime, and that's why you're part of this program. We're going to help you get there. So enjoy the rest of your evening, and I'll talk to everybody soon.